Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those of you who, like me, know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that most of them are rotten to the core, and that they cannot be fixed, so that they are worse than just being a waste of our time. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand how they are doing so, why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant schemes, treacherous schemes, even if those schemes are political or patriotic or even religious, it isn't hateful. It's the most caring and compassionate thing we can do. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to further explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, because its empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. You're not going to find it in government. You're not going to find it in a military. You're not going to find it in your political party. You most certainly aren't going to find it in a religious institution. Hope comes from only one place. Reliable hope. Dependable hope. And that's the Torah. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-300-7645. You may have noticed, if you're paying attention to the news, that there was a confession from Gaddafi's son, Saadi. Yes, it's Dateline Libya CNN. Libyan state television has aired a video of Muammar Gaddafi's son, Saadi, as he apologized to the nation from prison. Now, the moment you read that or hear that, your first response has got to be, oh, good grief. I can't even call them a government, is the amalgamation of terrorist organizations that now lord over Tripoli in lieu of a syphilitic secular dictator, are they convinced, are they so stupid that they think that the world won't look at this and say, come on, you tortured the guy. This is a forced confession. Or do they think that the Muslims in Libya are so thoughtless, so irrational, that they would actually believe that this is a legitimate confession? The prisoner, who they show being shaved bald, said, quote, I apologize to the people of Libya and to the brothers in the Libyan state for the disturbance and destabilization I have caused in Libya. And I admit that those were wrong things that I should not have done, end quote, he said. The destabilization in Libya occurred because Qatar decided that it would be in the Libyans' interest, in their interest certainly, to arm the most fundamentalist, the most ruthless Islamic jihadists. In almost all cases, the Islamic terrorist organizations that the Qataris provided weapons to were headed by jihadists that had participated in the Great Jihad and who had also participated in the Lesser Jihad. The Great Jihad was the one sponsored by the United States and Afghanistan, where Zbigniew Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter came up with the lame-brained idea that we could give the Russians a taste of what they had given us in Vietnam, excuse me, by arming and equipping, by enriching the Pakistani Taliban, who was also partnering at the time with Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, and that we could create a proxy war by renting them from the Pakistani government to fight using American weapons against the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan. That was the Great Jihad. Now, that Great Jihad, of course, was won by America's proxy. But at what cost? When it was won, the jihadists simply went back to the countries from which they had come, and a preponderance of them came from Libya, and they began to terrorize those countries. 9/11, for example, is a result. The terrible terrorist acts that took place in the UK, in Spain, and throughout Russia, even throughout Africa, are a result of returning jihadists from the Great Jihad. The Lesser Jihad was what occurred in Iraq following America's invasion. There, too, a disproportionate number of the jihadists who participated in the lesser jihad came from Libya. When they returned, they wanted a piece of Muammar Gaddafi. And the Qatari emir gave them that opportunity by arming and equipping them. The disturbance and destabilization that was caused in Libya is a direct result of this. It was not a result of what was a stable government and a secular government for years. So what he has said is the antithesis of the truth. He knows the truth. And for him to make this statement and for it to be so juvenile and so inconsistent with reality, it was either make it or we will beat you some more. Saadi, one of Gaddafi's seven sons, had been in a Tripoli jail since his extradition earlier this month from neighboring Niger. The North American country, North African country, that had been seeking the handover of Saadi because he fled across the border when the rebel forces toppled his father in a NATO-backed uprising in 2011. He is recorded as saying on this video, "I call on all the people carrying weapons to disarm. Weapons should only be in the hands of the state." Saadi Gaddafi, dressed in a blue detainee suit, said in the video, "They should resort to reconciliation." Now, that's an amazing statement. You see, all the hands and the guns in Libya were in the hands of the state before Qatar decided to turn Libya into a terrorist marketplace and a jihadi war zone. And now all of the weapons are in the hands of these warring, these private militias, civilian militias. And so this notion that all weapons should be in the hands of the state, the most powerful of the Islamic terrorist organizations in the country, controlling the media, is saying, okay, all you other terrorist organizations, you should give your weapons to us. Fat chance of that. And the person they have making that play is the very individual who survived their coup. It's laughable in the extreme. The very fact that people, that civilians have weapons is because the government wasn't able to stop the uprising, and because NATO aided and abetted it. And now what you have is nothing but an armed collection of Mujahideen groups, all perpetrating all manner of carnage on the people of Libya, and providing a marketplace for very sophisticated weapons for the whole of Northern and Central Africa, which is why that continent has erupted into such a terrorist turmoil since America did the wrong thing and backed the wrong side, as is its custom, in Libya. There have been concerns. This very brilliant journalist from CNN writes about the legality of the video and what impact it may have on the case. Some concerns. Are you an idiot? If, this is a quote, "If I ever had any hope," which he didn't, of course, "that there might be some form of due process in Libya, it was shattered. Watching Saadi repent in a videotaped confession without any hint of legal representation made me realize that there is no hope for a trial in accordance with international law in Libya," said Jacqueline Frazier, an American former aide to Saadi Gaddafi. "I, along with his family, would like to emphasize that this confession was coerced and therefore non-admissible in a court of law." Well, it's worse than that. The things they coerced him into saying are absurd. And just the thought of this. You have an entire country that decides that they're going to take up arms and they're going to based upon various clans, those with aligned with Gaddafi, war against those clans that were opposed to him, that were seeking power. And they're just going to have a free-for-all with the United States bombing the Libyan military so it could not be used to bring order to Libya. And you have all of these victorious gangs now having fought to rid the world, killing Muammar Gaddafi and ridding the world of his influence, now wanting the people of Libya to be influenced by him and to do what he asks. How far have we fallen on the intelligence scale that the hooligans leading Libya would consider this a wise thing to do? As we move on to the next story, our toll-free number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. At least 70 people are reported to have died from the Ebola virus. It's a disease that causes a person to bleed out. You hemorrhage and without control. You'll bleed out of every orifice of your body and internally with Ebola. It is perhaps among, you know, with lots of horrible ways for our bodies to give out on us and for them to be in rebellion against living, it is amongst the most undesirable. And to have 70 people to have died, and there's at least another 111 suspected cases of this viral disease that spreads in the blood and completely shuts down the immune system, causing a high fever, headache, and extreme muscle pain prior to bleeding the individual to death. In the country of Guinea, the virus is transmitted by contact with the fluids of the infected individuals or infected animals. We live at a time where we have become increasingly susceptible to these kinds of horrible diseases and pandemics. And this is one to keep an eye on. So I bring it to your attention. We'll be back after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Our toll-free number is 877-300-7645. Turkish Prime Minister Tayyip Erdogan has been in the news a lot recently, and he continues to prove himself every day to be a fundamentalist Muslim, an enraged individual, blaming his own failures on everyone else. It is the nature of Islam. In the Quran, the failures of Muhammad were blamed initially on his neighbors, the Quraysh. Then they were blamed on the Jews as he was forced out of exile for having made a mockery of his new religion. Then when Jews were over 100, they were blamed on the Christians. In the growing case of Islam, what you'll find is almost all Muslims blame their despicable state, the fact that Islamic countries are so impoverished, they're so hellish in terms of places to live, they blame Jews, even today, for their condition. So it is the nature of Islam. It's the nature of politics in general, but of particularly Islamic politicians to blame everybody else for their own decadence. Well, Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan made the news in more recent days for a combination of things. You know, one is that when he wanted to impose fundamentalist Islam over what had been the most secular of Islamic countries, the first thing he did is he de-teethed the generals over the Turkish military. It had been the Turkish military that had either run Turkey as a secular state or assured that it maintained as a secular state. But Erdogan manufactured a coup against his own generals, imprisoning most of them, killing many of them. Then after doing that, he went after the media and killed and imprisoned any journalist who would dare write about the Islamization of Turkey. And so he made a lot of enemies, but amongst the most fundamentalist Muslims, of course, he was a hero because he was imposing fundamentalist Islam on Turkey. And they were cheering his success as they are now. And the majority of Turks are fundamentalist Muslims. Recently, Erdogan has been exposed as a complete hypocrite with audio tapes of he talking to his son about how they are going to invest and hide money that they have accepted as bribes in Turkey. And, of course, Erdogan blamed his foes for exposing those tapes and for listening into his conversation. He did not apologize for being a hypocrite, for being a con artist. And so in light of all of this, particularly now that voice recordings have also aired that show that Erdogan was looking for ways to conjure up justification for Turkey using NATO equipment to enter the Syrian war, making himself look like a fool, disingenuous all over again. There was a poll that was taken of popularity. And so this is how Tayyip Erdogan responded. The dateline is Turkey. Reuters is the reporting entity. Turkish Prime Minister Tayyip Erdogan looked a step closer to another presidential bid and to gaining the upper hand in a bitter power struggle on Monday, casting strong local election results as a mandate to hunt down enemies within the state in their lair. Now, it's not very often that you would expect a politician, particularly one that has been deemed prior to all of these episodes as a moderate, with a statement, we're going to hunt down. Now, the enemies of the state are not enemies of the state, they're enemies of Erdogan and his Islamization of Turkey. His AK party, which is the most fundamentalist Islamic party in Turkey, swept the electoral map in Sunday's polls. When Muslims vote, they do what their imam tells them to do. And the imam, the most fundamentalist Muslims, will tell those who attend their mandatory Friday prostrations that they either vote for the AK party, the most fundamentalist Islamic party in Turkey, or that Allah will know and that he will see to it that they are killed and that they are tortured in the hottest places in hell. That's why they get such overwhelming support in every election taking place anywhere in the Islamic world for the most fundamentalist, diabolical, and violent Islamic party. Welcome back to Shattering Myths, returning to the story of Prime Minister Tayyip Erdogan. And before I continue with the story, to say the reason that I think it's important that we know what is happening in Turkey is that this man, and no other really, has been touted routinely in the media as an example of what the Arab Spring revolutions ought to have aspired to. And it was said that way because there are elections in Turkey, and because Turkey had previously had a reputation of being a somewhat secular state. And, of course, most who write in the media, most who speak on behalf of the media, most who speak as politicians, very seldom, if ever, do their homework. They speak out of ignorance. They speak out of a desire to create the perception of truth as opposed to conveying actual truth. The reality is that Erdogan has been a fundamentalist Muslim, that he has taken Turkey back to the kind of conditions that were experienced during the Ottoman Empire. He has become a de facto dictator. And the once secular influence of the Turkish military is now been squandered. It's been completely overturned by Erdogan's malfeasance, by Erdogan's criminalization of generals, by his relentless pursuit and control over the judicial system and the media in Turkey, so that he gets whatever it is that he's trying to impose. And he and his AK party are fundamentalist Muslims. And so rather than being an example of what Muslims ought to do, Erdogan is an example of what's wrong in the Islamic world. Now, his AK party swept the electoral map in Sunday's polls, and the reason is obvious. I've shared that with you. It's the reason that every time there is a vote taken in an Islamic country, between 65 and 75% of the voters pick the most fundamentalist Islamic party and most fundamentalist Islamic candidates. It not only indicates that Muslims are genuinely fundamentalists, but that voting in an Islamic country is an utter waste of time. It is counterproductive. So they have regained control of the two largest cities, Istanbul and Ankara. And they have, the AK, Fundamentalist Islamic Party, has increased its share of the national vote, as this reads, his pugnacious leadership style, beloved by a loyal conservative voter base, trumped a steam of corruption allegations and security leaks. Well, that's interesting. So they're saying that the issues really with Erdogan, it's just he's pugnacious in his leadership style. It's a matter of style. He's a bit pugnacious. But his pugnacious leadership style is beloved by a loyal conservative voter base. Oh, come on. This is so pathetic. His leadership is to take Turkey to a place where it is governed by Sharia law, where Islam is the only accepted religion, where anyone who isn't a fundamentalist Muslim is labeled an enemy and is hunted down as such. That's where he's going. It has nothing to do with his style. His base is not on conservatism, but instead on fundamentalism. And yes, he has trumped a stream of corruption allegations because fundamentalist Muslims don't care. In Islam, it's acceptable to lie. In Islam, it's acceptable to steal. Well, the Quran even has surahs on making stealing illegal. In Islam, it's acceptable to be a dictator. That's the nature of the religion. From a balcony at AKP headquarters, at the end of a long and bitter election that became a referendum on his rule, Erdogan told thousands of cheering supporters that his enemies in politics and the state, whom he labeled as traitors, terrorists, and an alliance of evil, would pay the price. That is the kind of verbiage that you would expect from an Islamic dictator. Word for word. Wake up, world. Erdogan is who he is. He is a fundamentalist Muslim that is exactly as he has labeled his enemy. A proponent of jihadi terrorism. In an alliance with evil. A traitor to what once was a secular state. Speaking of his personal foes, those who tried to expose his dictatorial ways, those who actually exposed his graft and malfeasance, he said, "We will enter their lair before a huge firework display lit up Ankara's midnight sky. They will be brought to account. How can you threaten national security?" He reminds me of what takes place in America. When the malfeasance of the NSA is exposed, they scream, "You're threatening national security." When the malfeasance in the FBI occurred, the leaders in America said, "You've threatened national security." No. Those who have brought Erdogan's corruption to light aren't threatening national security. They've revealed that the leader of Turkey is a scum, that he is repulsive, that he should be thrown out of power. That has nothing to do with national security. It has all to do with Erdogan being corrupt. But they always wrap themselves in national security. It is what these kind of scumbags do. It's why you should not be political. It's why you should not be patriotic. They will play you for a fool just as Erdogan is playing the world for fools. The harsh tone of his balcony address suggested that he felt that he now had a mandate for strong action against his enemies. From tomorrow, there may be some who flee, he said. The election campaign has been dominated by a power struggle between Erdogan and U.S.-based cleric Fethullah Gulen. It's cleric is not in the sense of this man's not a Christian. No, he's a fundamentalist Muslim as well. But he recognizes that Erdogan is a Muslim by convenience. He is using Islam to cement his power. And that Erdogan has also gone after any Islamic teacher, any Islamic writer, any Islamic scholar who isn't a surrender, who doesn't surrender to him and capitulate to his party, the AKP. The U.S.-based cleric, Fethullah Gulen, accuses Erdogan of using a network of followers in the police and judiciary, as well as the media, to fabricate graft smears in an effort to topple it. Erdogan, who has long drawn support from the same Muslim professional class that reveres Gulen, has purged thousands of police officers and hundreds of judges and prosecutors since the anti-graft raids in December targeted businessmen close to the premier as well as the sons of some government ministers, including his own. So what do the guilty do when they are de facto dictators over a country? They conduct purges. If anyone in the judiciary is willing to do their job and hold them accountable, they're imprisoned. They're killed. If someone in the media is going to hold them accountable, do their job, they're imprisoned. They're killed. If anyone in the police force willing to do their job, imprisoned and killed, sort of diminishes the tendency for anyone to do the right thing. But you can do the right thing. You can call this program. You can participate in this discussion. Toll free, 877-376-45. I'd like to turn to the Ukraine, if I may. Former Prime Minister Yulia, and I heard last name is way too many syllables for me to correctly pronounce, but I will give it a try. It's Tymoshenko. Tymoshenko said that she plans to run for president. She was the one that was locked up, came out in a little wheelchair initially with the braided hair buns, making her look like Princess Leia in Star Wars. She was released after serving 3 years in jail in February following the ouster of President Viktor Yanukovych. Now, of course, the way that the properly elected president was ousted was through a riot where Ukrainians camping out in Kiev threw Molotov cocktails and killed police and then blamed their terrible situation on the police who they were killing and on the government that they were bombing. Well, it was a followed by a referendum which led to Russia's annexation of Crimea. The Crimeans voted 97% to say, we want nothing to do with the mob rule in Kiev and the rest of Ukraine. We want to go back and be part of Russia. We've been part of Russia for three centuries now. And this attempt at independence has obviously failed miserably. And this is the second riot-based revolution in just a matter of 10 years. Earlier, the International Monetary Fund, as you know, agreed to a deal with Ukraine that is worth $25 billion. Yes, now that we have pried the Ukraine out of Russian hands, who was willing to provide them this year with $15 billion, the United States, through the International Monetary Fund, has picked up a new dependent, a new child. Yes, your unruly child, the child who doesn't want to work, but wants you to pay for them, is now called the Ukraine. Aren't you proud? Welcome back to Shattering Mess. U.S. President Barack Obama said the International Monetary Fund's announcement was, quote, a major step forward to help Ukraine stabilize its economy and meet the long-term needs of its people. Of course, that was an absolute lie. You do not stabilize a country that cannot pay its debts with more debt. And you do not meet the long-term needs of a people when you cause them to be, A, more indebted, and B, only deal with a year's indebtedness. The Ukraine has taken money from the IMF three times previously. Each of those three times, it reneged in major ways against the commitments that it had made. And not only did it renege on the commitments it had made for those loans, the terms and conditions of the loan, it was in a position where it could not pay back any of those loans, which is why this money is being provided not to stabilize the Ukrainian economy, but instead so that the Ukraine doesn't default on its loans and go bankrupt. But why is it in America's interest to give money, money that America does not have and thus will borrow? So why should America borrow money to meet the borrowing debts of the Ukraine? You know, how is that in any taxpayer's interest? Isn't it in every American's interest that the Ukraine become part of Russia, that Russia loans the Ukraine money rather than forcing Americans to do it? The woman who is running for election was a major figure in the last revolution. This is Yulia. She led the Orange Revolution in 2004. Yes, just a decade ago, as I had shared previously. The Ukraine had another revolution. This is its second revolution in 10 years. That's how mismanaged this country is. That revolution ousted Yanukovych from the presidency after an election that was at least presented by the Orange Revolutionists as fraudulent. He was reelected. Now, Yulia was imprisoned in 2011. That's why she was released from prison. She was convicted for corruption. And she was convicted specifically of corruption, personal corruption and graft, linked to a gas deal that she brokered with Russia while she was prime minister in 2009. So here you've ousted a guy who was trying to get the best deal in terms of a loan for his people. He had given up on the IMF because the terms the IMF wanted were too austere. Russia was willing to offer much better terms on its loan. Russia was in a position to do so because it supplies the Ukraine with its gas and can simply deduct from or use the gas payments as a means to collateralize the loan. And so Russia was in a much better position. Yeah, the Ukrainians are a major customer of Russian gas. And so Yanukovych made the right decision on behalf of the Ukrainians. He got them loans at a much under much more favorable terms. This woman, however, lined her own pockets, was thrown in prison for corruption on the gas deal she brokered with Russia when she was prime minister. And now we're going to pretend like she's a better choice? On Monday, she denied the authenticity of a taped conversation in which she was called for Russia to be turned into scorched earth and for the ethnic Russians in the Ukraine to be killed. So, you know, there's no such thing as a private conversation these days. The American ambassador to the Ukraine was recorded talking to the Undersecretary of State in Washington, saying blankety-blank the EU. It's the F word. Not blankety-blank, it's just blank. The F word, the European Union, and then went on to say how America was going to impose its will in the Ukraine. Well, here's this woman who is going to perhaps become the new president of the Ukraine, who was thrown in prison for graft, saying that she wants Russia to be turned into scorched earth, and she wants the ethnic Russians in the Ukraine to be killed. And this is good.